This is the Senate Committee on Labor, Consumer, and Business Affairs, meeting in hearing room B at 8 o'clock a.m. on May 6, 1977. On today's agenda is workers' compensation.
We amended it with the Johns and the
Come to order. Let's turn to 884 and see if we can't take some action on it. That's a...
You want to cut, maybe cut a little bit of that.
Amendment, right. Okay. Mr. Carlson, what have we done to the bill by the amendments?
At the hearing on April 19, the committee adopted the amendments as proposed by Dave Nelson, which would change, if you were looking at the bill on lines 9 and on line 10, would be changed to 5.3%. All of section 2 through actually, the committee adopted the amendment that section 2 would remain as is. And as would section 3 remain as is, 4.
I don't have a copy of it. Is there a mock-up or is
yeah. No, unfortunately, I do not have a mock-up of the bill. I'm using the copy that we had from the hearing that day.
Do you have a copy of the printed amendments for us?
I have them only on the dog track. I did not have another copy of the. I'll be happy to pass this down to indicate what was taken care of.
Will you start over then?
Start over again?
Because none of us have copies, so we have to mock up our own bill.
Why don't we have this mocked up for our next for our next meeting, and let's put it off till next Monday. Till Monday. And where is the agenda?
She has a type one, which is 1048, 1049, 1050.
Let's turn to Senate Bill 1048. Do you want to go on that?
I had given it to legislative, and they didn't put that part in, so I just learned about 10 minutes before that they didn't have any.
Mr. Chairman, the mocked-up bill before you was a result of action taken at a subcommittee meeting on 1048, at which there was representation by...
Just a minute. I have a few extra copies if some in the audience want a copy there. Why? Could you give Mr. Fetterman a copy here, too, for the press? Okay.
This subcommittee was attended by representatives of the AFL-CIO, various employers group, the Workers' Compensation Board, State Accident Insurance Fund, the self-insurers, and the private insurers were all represented. The resulting bill contains departures from the bill as printed, and I go through that quickly, if that would be all right. On page one of the mocked-up bill, there is an addition made to the amendment to the definition of suitable occupation. It adds the concept that someone would not be permanently totally disabled if they could be rehabilitated to hold a substantial, suitable type of occupation.
Mr. Chairman, do we want to go through all these and then come back to them, or do we want to talk about
If you have any question, I think if you would care to interrupt Senator Carson.
Question or approval.
Or approval, right.
I'll move that change. Is that what you want to do?
Question, when would it be determined that...
Just a minute.
Okay.
I think they're bringing on the package.
Yeah, just a minute. Did you have a question, Senator Wires?
Yes, when would it be determined that they may be trained to perform through rehabilitation? After they've been trained to perform it through rehabilitation, or at the time that before they've had the rehabilitation? What I'm getting at is one way to eliminate somebody from workman's comp would be to say, well, if you participate in rehabilitation, you'll be able to do this. And the guy's there with one leg and one arm.
I would presume that it would be when the condition of the injured workman was determined stationary by the doctor. If we have someone from the Workman's Compensation Board here, am I right, George?
Suitability for retraining would be determined by the disability prevention.
Mr. Chairman,
by the disability
prevention division.
Prevention division.
Okay.
When? At
before termination.
Yeah, it would block. Am I not correct? It would block a person who may be trained to perform through rehabilitation would never reach the status of permanent totally disabled.
That makes sense.
Why don't you bring him up?
George, why don't you, someone come up here from the department. Can you come up and you have someone with him?
Yeah.
If there are any questions, we can ask them at the time. Is there anyone here from SAFE?
Before. They look at you and say, you can be retrained. Now, if you fail, you can be evaluated, I suspect.
Okay, now...
How do you see this operating with this amendment in it? How's it going to operate?
All right, but prior to the determination of permanent total disability, there will be an opinion come from the Disability Prevention Division.
Would you pull that mic up there?
The Disability Prevention Division, which contains doctors, psychologists, therapists, etc., whether the man is capable, a man or woman, is capable of being rehabilitated, and plus whether he's eligible, he or she is eligible for a vocational rehabilitation program through the Department of Human Resources. And that information would go to evaluation, who would be making the final determination, as I see it. Now, I just got this, but that seems to me the way it would go.
Do you have any further comment?
No.
Okay. Any further questions?
Well, my question is, this looks like an excellent idea to me. I'm not trying to pose the idea. But I'm trying to think how it would be administered. If the man comes in and he's now ready for physical rehabilitation and it's decided that he shouldn't get permanent and total because if he participates in the physical rehabilitation and gets trained and so forth, that he can get another job. But then he goes through that and it turns out that even though he gives it his best effort, that he isn't able to, then will he be eligible for permanent?
It would seem to me that the results of the program would then become part of the record upon which evaluation makes the determination. A man, you see, if the man is determined eligible for a retraining program, his benefits, and he's medically stationary and not receiving time loss, his benefits, he continues to receive the time loss benefits, but they're reimbursable from the rehabilitation reserve. Then when he gets through the program, his claim is referred to evaluation for a determination.
And if he hasn't been able to get a job after the rehabilitation because he's still unable to move or something, then that would be, that could be considered at that time.
Right.
Thank you.
Chairman.
Senator Roberts.
During the time that he is, before he starts the rehabilitation, but after the injury, if he is determined to be someone for whom rehabilitation can provide a new career, some kind of new vocation, would he be considered a temporary total disability?
Providing he's not medically stationary, yes.
If he were medically stationary, then what would he be?
Then the carrier or the employer requests a determination. And if he is medically stationary, he comes off of the time loss that is chargeable to the claim, and but his benefits, he doesn't know that. His benefits continue just as though he were on time loss, but the carrier or the employer is reimbursed by the rehabilitation reserve.
So this means savings of money to the employer.
It really, in effect, what it does, it
only on a temporary basis
takes the burden off of the specific claim cost and puts the spread.
Okay, second question. If the individual is, say, 50, 55, and the physical injury is such that they can be trained to perform another job, but after they're trained, they're physically able, but they're having a hard time starting a new career at 50 or 55, especially when they already have some disabilities. Are they going to be eligible for evaluated for that kind of disability, a disability that they wouldn't have had if they hadn't have been injured, but they, you know, but it continues to mean unemployment because of their age in addition to the injury.
But that, you see, would be part of the new evaluation after the training.
I'm asking what's going to happen to those individuals.
Well, of course, it would be on an individual basis. There would be opinions in there from employment counselors and people of that nature as to whether this man can be employed, even though he is.
That's done now.
That's done now, exactly.
Right. Well, Senator Wires?
The only concern I have is that we don't leave whoever is considering this after he's gone through the rehabilitation with a statute that says that he is not permanently disabled because he's been retrained through rehabilitation. See, this doesn't say that, as used in this section, a suitable occupation is one which the workman has been retrained, has been trained to perform through rehabilitation. But it doesn't say, and is able to perform after receiving rehabilitation. It just says, has been trained to perform. So isn't there the danger that he go through rehabilitation and go to this further evaluation that point they decide, yes, he has completed the training, but he's there saying, yes, I completed the training, but I still can't do the job.
It says here, Whitman has a physical ability and the training or experience. The physical ability is in there.
Well, the question is where the or
may be trained. I see. You're questioning or may be trained through to perform through rehabilitation.
Well, Mr. Wyman has proposed that we substitute or has been trained to perform through rehabilitation, which makes it better, I think. But it still leaves it with the possibility of a guy who's gone through rehabilitation and still can't get a job because he can't do what training and rehabilitation involved.
Senator, I wonder if that doesn't become an unemployment proposition rather than a workman's compensation proposition at that stage of the game. If he is capable of doing the work but unable to get the job, is that workman's compensation or is that unemployment?
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, just a moment. Did you want to follow up on that, Wires? Or is that the responsibility of, is that the responsibility of the employer because he can't find a job?
I see. That's a very neat issue. I'm starting to come a lot clearer to me. Let me respond just quickly to it. Then, is there something in here that will guarantee that there'll be a careful determination of whether he's whether he has been trained to perform some new work through rehabilitation? You know, we've all gone through school. I remember in high school with the some of my buddies graduated from high school without learning to read. And now if somebody went through the rehabilitation and didn't learn anything, would it then be fair to kick them off into unemployment and welfare?
I think the answer to that is it's the employer's responsibility because a man can't learn. Well, maybe he was doing a job that
we've all heard the story about the guy that pulled the legs and wings off the fly and finally jabbed him when he only had one leg left, so the damn thing won't jump, you know.
Yeah. I think the intent of this section was, and it may be badly worded, was to avoid the situation where suitable occupation is read by the courts often as being so narrow that if the guy can't go back to exactly the same job in exactly the same spot, he's PTD. And I think your concerns are very good. If there was language that could be worded so that it allows the board to look at somebody and say, well, you are performing a job. It's not exactly the same one that you had before your injury, but you are having gainful employment, and we consider that not grounds for making you permanently totally disabled.
That's good.
In other words, having some cases read suitable occupation as meaning the same job, the same pay, the same place, and I think there's a feeling among, a concern among people interested in workman's comp that it has been read too narrowly, and this was a chance to include work that one had been rehabilitated to perform even though it may not be the same job.
I'm 100% with that.
There's language, perhaps, probably.
Does this not, though, open up the definition then to almost any job by putting this language in? If you say may be trained to perform through rehabilitation, suitable, then you might as well do away with suitable as a word. I don't know. That's, what do you think?
Do you have any comment on that, George? Or?
To carry on with Senator Wyatt's question a little bit, wouldn't a failure of vocational treatment, let's call it that, be treated the same way as medical treatment? For instance, if a man is injured, not every injury can be medically cured. It gets up to a point. Well, the same thing is going to happen on the vocational treatment, and it seems to me that the expertise and experience of the people who make the reports and the people who evaluate the reports will enter into the picture and be a part of determining what that award should be.
So you think if he, in good faith, was trying, but he hadn't been able to learn it in the rehabilitation, that would be taken into consideration?
I believe it would.
And they wouldn't then say that he'd been trained to perform it through rehabilitation. They'd say, well, we tried, but he wasn't trained. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, same thing as if he didn't heal.
If I felt comfortable if this language meant that, I'd be comfortable with the language myself.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I asked our assistant a question. He didn't answer it.
I think it broadens the definition of suitable occupation. Well, I think that's a matter for the courts. The courts currently have interpreted suitable occupation very narrowly, as you're aware. Whether they would read the amendment to the statute and continue to read it as narrowly as they have, or whether they would broaden it up is anyone's guess. It's a matter, of course, of litigation. There might be a way to close this down a little bit, and so it would read, are an occupation which the worker is able to perform after rehabilitation. Now, that would point him to the fact that he does have a job, he is performing the job adequately, and in that case, would not be a permanent total.
How would that, where would that appear?
Well, it would just be a substitution, or an occupation, it would read, as used in this section, a suitable occupation is one which the workman has the physical ability and the training or experience to perform, or an occupation which he is able to perform after rehabilitation.
Okay. Is that agreeable to the...
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There's once again, it is broadening.
Okay, is there any objection to that amendment? To the, if not, let's include that language there, then.
Somebody out there waving their hand. I don't know if they...
Senator, yeah. I need to pick my arm here, but I think there's a hole in this thing that should be filled. And it uses the term as a physical ability. I think it should be physical and mental ability. In other words, you can say a man has a physical ability, but he's got an IQ of 40. I think you should have more than a mental ability to perform, too.
Would this include...
That out, didn't we? The physical part, didn't we?
No.
Just...
No,
no, no,
no,
that's
the
case.
Would that include psychological problems? In other words, if the person has a psychological problem, he would be considered PTD?
What would the psychological problems be as a result of his employment? Or?
Of his injury.
Of his injury.
Trauma.
Yeah.
And lack of motivation.
Okay.
Actually, you're only adding an occupation.
And he might have a real fear of heights or something, but he could use certain occupations.
Okay, there's no problem with the adoption of this or this amendment that was suggested by...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
My good friend Senator Carson was out of the room. I have a certain amount of appreciation for his legal ability. I'd like to have you run that thing by him.
The Senator Carson,
he just went and stepped in and talked to me.
He's here over there.
He's right here.
Wait.
Okay. Oh, I see. Sorry about that. Why don't you go on and...
Senator Carson, we'd like to have your...
You want my eye vote or...
Yeah, no. let me tell you, Rich, you want to go over the amendment proposed? No. Just what has been proposed.
Okay, it's been proposed that after the discussion, some of the concerns might be answered if the new language, that is the engrossed mm-hmm. new language there, would be deleted and inserted, or an occupation which he is able to perform after rehabilitation. The intent behind that language would that the way it reads, may be trained, it sounds like there could be a decision made before he's even gone through rehabilitation or is actually performing a job, and this new language would at least tie it to the fact that he does have a job. It may not be the same one as before, but he's performing work, he's gotten there through rehabilitation.
Is he required to have a job before it's effective?
or just capable of performing a job. That's where the discussion was when I left. It's just capable of performing a job, isn't it?
The way it is, it could be trying to say an occupation which he is performing after rehabilitation.
Well,
the able
as a result of a job which he is performing as a result of rehabilitation.
That's pretty narrow.
Or an occupation which he is able to perform.
Yeah. Well, when I heard what you read, that sounded good, but then the explanation seemed to say that he not only had to be able, but he had one of the tests to whether he was able, whether he had a job. And I agree with Moore that really is getting into the unemployment aspect rather than into the workman's comp aspect.
I don't think it says it.
I don't think it does either.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Roberts?
Along the lines that Senator Carson is speaking on, the concern I have is that I don't think that it is a clear-cut case of unemployment versus disability, because if a person is injured and cannot return to the occupation in which he was earning a living, supporting his family, her family, and is trained to perform a job for which there are no opportunities available to become employed, I think that person has received an injury that has not been remedied. And I don't think that simply by saying, well, if you can work at something, therefore you're not a problem any longer, doesn't satisfy.
I mean, building arcs, you know, they can tell them how to build arcs. They're just, unfortunately, not many arc jobs around.
Right. Or saying, fine, if you,
we have that trouble in correction.
Or we've trained you to do this, the fact that nobody wants to hire you since you're going to have a 5 or 10 year career till retirement, and there's plenty of younger people that we're going to get a lot, lot longer stable employee out of that, we're just not interested. Now, I just think that
don't you think this
those
is
people
true
shouldn't be
when
told
a person's
to
not
them.
Injured when they reach a certain age if they're unemployed.
That's true. That's true.
So this is just life. I realize it's just part of getting old. That
I just don't feel that I should
regardless
should
if you're injured or not
for that individual being on welfare.
Why should the employer be responsible for a man because a man gets old? You know.
Because I suppose it would depend on how the individual became injured.
Which I think is a social program if he's unemployed or welfare, but certainly not the employer's unless he's injured and unable to perform. Then it's the employer's responsibility, and that's what workman's comp is for. Any further questions or discussion?
I like this language we came up with, Mr. Chairman, because I think it leaves it open to the determination at the time of the final, after his rehabilitation. In some cases, they might have to see him on the job before they know he was able to perform it. Some jobs it requires heavy lifting or something like that. You might have to wait and see him on the job. In another case, if the man wasn't or woman wasn't willing to go out and try, they can use the word able and cut them off. And that seems to me that it's a really good.
Are you agreeable to the language that suggested? Okay, yeah. Let's go on to from there then, Rich.
What did we do about the metal? Are we going to put that in or leave it out?
Did we put that? Is it? Do you want to put? Do you want to explain that? Tom, I think you explained that. They want to include mental in there, as a physical and mental. I think if the emotional hang-up was a result of the injury, however, if he had emotional hang-ups prior to the injury,
I have a man in vocational rehabilitation right now who's intelligent somehow, he's rather short-circuited in other ways, and he just doesn't think communication are inaccurate.
No, they're
it just don't work. And that'd be very difficult. He said that we could do lots of work, but maybe we can't.
Why don't we just how far would that broaden up?
No.
Would that would broaden
it
up? What?
It doesn't draw it at all.
It is a present rule.
It's a present court rule. Okay, that's the way the courts have gone. Any psychological problem would be...
The courts are determining that now. Why is it necessary to include it in the bill?
Using the physical,
let's take out physical.
Just say the ability?
The ability.
Yeah, here's some of the stuff. Yeah.
No, that'd be all right. That move that would delete physical.
Okay, that would be just the ability.
Yeah. Leave it to the courts.
Leave it to the courts.
Mm-hmm. Makes business for the lawyers.
Okay. Well, I'm opposed to making business for the lawyers.
All right, well, we better leave it in then.
That's right. Let's leave it in.
I have two.
Well, then we should spell out physical, emotional, mental. It's still going to be determined.
Okay, as I understand the amendment, then the entire amendment would read, as used in this section, a suitable occupation is one which the workman has the ability and the training or experience to perform, or an occupation which he is able to perform after rehabilitation. That's as I understand the language.
Okay. Senator Waters moves deletion of the word physical. Are we agreed upon that?
Where is it?
Okay. As the ability.
Okay, the rest of the page is unchanged from the original bill. The bill is drafted.
What does this sub 2 do to the existing law?
Sub 2 is in the law currently.
It's in the law. Okay.
Sub 3 is.
Did we delete these? Or did we adopt these amendments, these other amendments at the same time?
There's no objections.
That's right. We did that. I asked if there were any objections. There were no objections.
To what, the entire?
Okay.
No, it reads for an occupation which he is able to perform through rehabilitation.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, sub 3 is new law established by the bill as drafted. It puts the burden on the workman of proving PTD status, that he is willing to seek regular gainful employment, has made reasonable efforts, and is not able to perform a job. That would be a showing upon the workman. Section 4 is new law created by the bill as written. It would require the workman to file income information each year and give the board discretion to determine that he is performing regular work at a gainful wage and therefore make a reduction in his PTD benefits if that was the case. Subsection 5 is...
Just one second. On 4... If a person has been a highly skilled, say, a jet mechanic, and he gets injured, and then he goes to work as a house painter, and let's assume for the sake of the example that he really was tired of all the technical work in the jet industry and he was really liking house painting, how would this suitable occupation thing work in there? Could he then argue, well, really, this house painting is far below my abilities, and you can't take me off permanent toll, or does 4 take care of that?
Well, we're making somewhat of a departure. The court, as you're aware, has been reading suitable occupation very narrowly to be almost mm-hmm. what he's been doing before,
mm-hmm.
at the same wage and so forth. The concept behind 4, as I understand it, is that if the injured workman under a PTD award does start performing work and this shows up on this income information that he's required to file by Section 4, the board may make reduction. Not take him off PTD, but we're talking in terms of a reduction.
First, they could reduce him to $1.
They could reduce him to $1. But the section does not say that he is not PTD. It talks in terms of giving the board discretion to make a reduction in view of the income that he is getting each year, even though he is technically PTD. That's the intent behind this.
Okay, you want to go on?
Section 5, sub 5, requires insurers to
reexamine each PTD claim every 2 years, at least every 2 years, or at a more frequent interval as the board may prescribe. As I understand it, there's concern that the PTD awards are not being reexamined, particularly by the private insurers, to determine whether the worker is indeed still unable to perform work. This is a, once again, discretion in the board at the time of the insurer presenting evidence. In other words, the insurer could not make a reduction without the board, without a hearing and evaluation by the board. This requires them to reexamine their PTDs that they're carrying every 2 years or more frequently.
But it doesn't require the injured workman to come forward with a medical report.
Sub 5 speaks to the insurer.
Okay.
Is there any problem with these subsections that we just went through?
Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
I just want to clear up this thing. It's still bugging me, and I think that I found the answer. But in subsection 3 of section 1, it says, the workman has the burden of proving permanent total disability status and must establish that he's willing to seek regular gainful employment and that he has made reasonable efforts to obtain such employment. Now, in the situation of the 55-year-old fella who's been working in a physical labor job and he's retrained to do something else, and he goes out and he looks and looks and looks and he can't find a job, even though he's gone through rehabilitation, and they say, great, you know, you can make buggy whips or you can make license plates or whatever it is, but there just doesn't seem to be anything in the market right now. Can that individual come back and say, look, I have gone out and sought employment and I've made reasonable efforts to obtain such employment as I was suitable, you know, in a suitable occupation as I was rehabilitated to the point that I could make license plates and there aren't any jobs in it, and can that individual still receive a benefit from workman's comp? Or, you know, this is...
You're asking whether he would come under unemployment or workman's comp, because if he was in the job market and couldn't secure work...
If he had been rehabilitated to perform a particular job or line of work, and there was no such work available, does subsection 3 then establish that that individual is still permanently totally disabled? Because that's what it seems, if this section 3 seems to relate to
section 1, he would be willing to seek, I think he has to be seeking employment. And he's made reasonable efforts to find an employment. If he doesn't find the employment, I presume that he would still be on the permanent total disability status until he finds it.
Even though he's gone through the rehabilitation
for
a suitable occupation.
But he has the burden of proof. He's just, if he's taken rehabilitation and he's just sitting around the house watching TV or
that's
basketball.
If that's really the way that would work, okay.
Are there any further questions? If you want to go on in,
there's a pretty redhead out here shaking her head. I wonder if she'd come up and sit by George and talk to us and go.
Who?
The AFL-CIO.
Pat Holden is who you're referring to.
She's
scratching
her head.
Could she come up, Mr. Chairman?
I don't care. Pat, do you want to? You have something you want to say?
He might save time later.
What? I think if she wants to come up,
you
want to give her your seat?
No.
I'd like to be able to ask her as we go along a question. I think that if you want to get some professionals, some people from the Workman's Compensation Board or that have been working with this, or an attorney, you have that probably the person to ask. Keith Wilson is here and is an attorney and also a member of the board. And
Pat was very knowledgeable as far as workman's comp is concerned, but I think that if you want to ask someone workman's comp, my suggestion would be that you would ask some of the people who have been working in it here for years. Unless you want to talk to her privately, and I would certainly, you could do so.
You better stop before you get my word.
Okay.
I think a lot of the concerns
this morning, all this stuff
that the committee is expressing is over how the language will be applied. Of course, workman's comp, considering the amount of litigation in this area, every word is sifted through numerous court cases, and I'm sure that will be the case, whatever is passed here. The courts will decide what the legislature was thinking of.
Well, we were eliminating most of that.
Good luck. Section 2 on page 2 gives the insurance commissioner power to enforce or to have sanctions against an insurer that does not re-examine the cases as set out. Does not re-examine the PTDs. Just gives the commissioner a little teeth to be sure that the private insurers are going to be complying with rules that the board may promulgate as far as re-examination of these claims. Section 3 is all current law. Down to page 4, sub E. This will permit the Department of Revenue to supply the Workman's Compensation Board with income information for the purposes of making any adjustment in PTDs and examining whether the worker is drawing wages to a degree that would be gainful employment under their discretion. Section 4 puts into law three new sections. Section 5 would enact in this state a reduction in workman's compensation award for the amount of Social Security disability payments to the injured worker. It is worded, the subcommittee adopted language so that all present awards would not be reduced. In other words, the worker who is currently getting the maximum award under the state level will have his benefits kept at the state level, even though the total award will be coming from two sources after the passage of this law. The worker who is getting a higher combined benefit now from the fact that the federal limitation is of 80% of his average current earnings is greater than the state 66 2/3%, would continue to get that higher combined benefit, although it would be coming from two sources. I suppose we could go into, and I have prepared some explanatory materials, and if I could go into those, but I think in general the subcommittee's looked at them, and I think people are aware that the intent of the legislation is to reduce no one's benefit, but to have it coming from two sources. After we pass this law, Social Security will, by their own law, not be able to take the reduction that they're taking. In many cases now, they're taking 100% reduction and paying nothing because our awards, since we do have a high benefit level, many of our awards do fall over there above their 80% of the workers' average current earnings limitation. Just going on before we go back, Section 6 is tied to that. Well, back to Section 5, no reduction in the PTD benefits shall be made unless authorized by the board. This is answer the concerns that since we do have 150 different private insurers, that these insurers would be making reductions on their own initiative rather than through any kind of authorization from the board. The board will monitor and will make the authorization for any reduction from the carriers. Section 3 is a safeguard section which prevents any reduction of state benefits being made before actual receipt of federal Social Security disability benefits by the injured workman. Claims often take between 5 months and a year for Social Security to process and get the first check out to the workmen. Many workmen, of course, are already on Social Security disability and are currently drawing. There's no phase over problem from them because they've already made application. It'll be very rapid. The new cases and the ones who have not yet made application to Social Security disability will have that waiting period, but state benefits under this section will continue until the actual receipt of the first check. So there should be no shortfall. Section 6 speaks to permanent total disability awards at time of retirement. When the workman begins to receive retirement benefits from federal Social Security, he will continue to receive all medical care benefits, except that at age 65, there will be a 50% reduction in the PTD claims. At age 66, 40%, and a 10% scale down thereafter until age 70. In addition to this amount, the carriers will be responsible for the increment between what the worker is actually receiving under Social Security retirement and that amount that he would have received had he made the maximum contribution. We're once again we're having a disputable presumption. And I don't really know why it has to be disputable, but a presumption that the worker has made the maximum contributions for clerical purposes, so that all workers would be receiving either from Social Security or combined from the carrier the maximum amount of Social Security retirement that would be available to anyone his age.
Is disputably correct there? Or did you take it out?
Well, this came from the Oregon trial lawyers. I don't know what you had in mind under disputable. Dave, do you?
Rather than have the worker have a burden of proving the maximum benefit in the case for some kind of homage, we just thought it would be more equitable in presuming that he did prove the maximum, but if the carrier had been committed to the amount of money, we'd have to dispute that presumption.
Well, I would think that the employer would, in all cases, have that kind of information because he knows when the worker got off. I mean, when the worker stopped. I thought we were talking more in terms of conclusive presumption.
It was to be automatic.
I thought it was to be automatic.
And if you want to dispute it, then it's not automatic.
Well, otherwise, I thought it was going to be conclusive. Yeah.
This was the original first proposal.
I think if you want it to be the same in all cases, and I think there is an argument for equity that all workmen under this should be getting the same, you would be talking in terms of either presumption without a disputable presumption or conclusive presumption, conclusively presumed or presumed.
But disputably.
Well, you would either strike disputable, disputably, or insert conclusively. Either one that would satisfy your concerns, I think.
Ladd, what would be the best term as far as you were concerned, dude?
Conclusively.
Okay. Is there any objection from committee members to using the word conclusively?
I object, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. For what reasons?
Well, Mr. Chairman, as my understanding, after your committee had met the last time, these things were pretty well finalized on what we were going to determine. If we keep going with splitting hairs today, we might as well change the board from Workman's Comp Board to Board of Social Protection, because we're going to find ourselves going back to the place of trying to work out all these compromises. We're not going to resolve the problems we're trying to go after. It's my understanding that everybody was going to have to give and it's going to be a shared situation that each person was going to have to give a little bit.
Well, I don't think this has any direct bearing. I mean, disputably or tested the language is all this.
Conclusively, we assume that at that point that you cannot challenge it, right?
Mr. Chairman, yes. Already amendments have been brought in that we've worked on and included from another section of the bill.
Let's talk about the word conclusive.
No, but the reasoning you're using is we shouldn't tamper with agreements already made. We've already tampered.
To that point, it was my understanding of the subcommittee that
agreements in the first place.
Well, it was my impression at the subcommittee meeting, and there may be one side or the other wants to differ with this, that we overlooked disputably. In other words, I understood that the understanding, the intent,
right,
that we had was that it would be, that increment would be paid, it would be the same for every or everybody would be getting the maximum Social Security.
We're not changing the
retirement benefit. Yeah. I think we overlooked disputably. I don't think we ever envisioned our employers coming in and going and burdening the board with trying to prove that the guy did not make any contribution after his injury. That was my impression.
This is for a man that's been injured before he reaches the age 65 retirement age, and we just would, for a payment of benefits, would be concluded or conclusive, but he's received, been paying Social Security all this time, so he's received the
So it could never be challenged?
Shouldn't be. That's the intent of the law. That was our intent in the first place. Would you, I mean, or do you have any problem with that now, Lynn? Senator Hannon?
I don't know, Mr. Chairman. Go ahead and run through it. Let me have some time back.
Okay.
Could I ask a question?
Sure.
I haven't been intimately involved in working this out about the Social Security offset, but I can't see how the federal Social Security system would hold still for some states to shift their workman's comp payments onto the federal system and others not. And apparently they are, but I'd like to have somebody, have you communicated with them or with our congressional delegation or some time up there?
We went to Seattle. I'll read the section of law that's controlling. Their statute allows them to take a reduction except where the state has provided for a reduction themselves. The language reads basically that if the state law provides for any kind of substantial reduction of Social Security benefits, then the feds are prohibited themselves from taking a reduction. It's 42 U.S.C. 424 sub B, which I could find for you.
For the Social Security
basically, here's the letter. For instance, on Washington law, since the provision does require a substantial reduction of workmen's compensation benefits, the Section 424A offset would be inapplicable. In other words, will take a reduction unless the state acts. Now, it's true that if all states did this, then they would have to comply at all states. They can't pick and choose on their state. But they're in fact very happy with the system because currently they're having to do the burdensome individual adjusting for each individual case as far as workman's comp benefits. Yeah. They would rather just go by manual and pay their manual payout, and that's of course what they will do after we enact the law. If we enact the law, they will pay as if the state of Oregon didn't exist.
That when you say the they, that's the they, the workers. The administrators, the bureaucrats. But what about the policy of the law of having one state relying more, if you look to the taxpayers, the people who are paying into Social Security, paying into Social Security, or Congress that enacts the laws, how are they letting one state have a Social Security offset and others not?
They don't. Any state that wants to go this route it can do so. This is what the fund is for, and the man is, he's injured prior to the age 65, he's entitled to disability benefits, and when he reaches the age 65, he's entitled to retirement benefits. This is what he's paying for, what the workman is paying for this. So what we're doing is shifting for something that rightfully belongs to that workman. It's legitimate by Social Security. Why shouldn't he receive it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the reason we're adopting this.
It's just baffling to me that Congress passed laws that would allow some states, you know, maybe Oregon has been in a...
All states can do it.
But some aren't.
It's a state trigger.
The state would have to do it. There's only
three. Then why hasn't Oregon been doing it all these years? Why have we been sitting here paying out state money when we could have been getting the federal money.
I think Washington discovered it first, or one of the first. I think
there's probably five states taking an offset.
And Alaska's working on it now.
The theory has always been that under workman's compensation, the employer picks up the cost of industrial accidents. This spreads it to another type of fund where it's equally shared in by worker and employer.
So the
it's not free money.
Well, I know there isn't any free lunch. I figured that out. But the employers in this state were rather slow in figuring this out and coming to the legislature and saying, hey, we could be relieved if we participate in
the other way. You want to start with
this time, yeah. Yeah, that's where the initial draft is.
Yeah. What's that?
It was the original, it was during the interim period that this.
Just this last interim, the employers began to suggest it.
Mm. They were just waiting for you to get in the legislature so they could accomplish it.
I see. But it's interesting to see that this system that's becoming overburdened had this relief available that the employers let other employers in other states find first.
Let's go on with the bill unless you interview.
Yeah, that's
we want to talk philosophy. Why?
I'm not trying to talk philosophy, but this is still, I don't want to hold us up any longer, but I still don't understand what happened here. It's a strange situation, I think. Don't you think? No, I don't know. Let's go on.
Section 7 is a section giving discretion and to the board to enforce the or to accommodate the provisions of a Social Security disability. Sub 1 would allow them to promulgate rules requiring a workman make application to federal Social Security disability benefits. Sub 2 would require injured workmen to file a general release with Social Security so that the workman's compensation board would know what monthly checks, what the amount of the monthly payment is, what the workman's federal benefit limitation is, so they can accurately compute the benefits as required by the law. Sub 3 allows the board in their discretion to take appropriate measures and impose appropriate sanctions to secure compliance by workmen to the sections of this law. And sub 4 would allow the board to pass rules to avoid situation where injured workmen receive benefits in excess of the amounts authorized by Section 5 and 6 of this Act. Section 8 is the effective date section, and there are several effective dates. The Social Security disability reduction shall apply in the cases of injuries prior to the effective date of the Act. That reduction will become effective July 1, 1978. In our subcommittee conversations and our conversations with Social Security in Seattle, 1 year appears to be a good length of time. The program in Washington ran into some problems at its very start, but the legislature gave them something like 2.5 months to comply, to make a reduction on everyone, retroactive and prospectively, on both PTD and PPD. So they ran into a 6-month administrative lag, which we're trying to avoid by year date. To injuries incurred after the effective date of the Act, it shall be immediate. In other words, the new cases will be, the reduction will be developed and applied immediately. The reduction in benefits at the age of 65 applies only to benefits for injuries incurred after the effective date of this Act. In other words, no one who is presently on PTD will have their PTD award scaled down. This will only apply to awards made on injuries incurred after the effective date of this Act. This is the package that the subcommittee put out.
Yeah. Any questions? Senator Roberts.
What is the present benefit paid out on the difference between, say, a Social Security disability benefit and a retirement benefit to the same workman? Does it go down at retirement age under Social Security?
Around figure, you could say that if we're going to presume that he's going to be getting maximum Social Security retirement, we're talking $270 or $300. Disability, of course, it depends on his work records, right, his current earnings and all. I would say you're going to find, at least the figures I have from Washington, there, some of their people are getting between $500 and $600. But it can be lower, it's an individually figured.
Does an individual who is receiving a federal Social Security disability benefit, is their benefit reduced to the retirement benefit at age 65?
At age 62.
At age 62?
Social Security does not pay disability benefits after age 62. They go off of that system and start paying retirement.
So is this a question? There was talk at one time about a phase down. The way it is now, we're just going to go right up until age 62, and they'll go straight from Social Security, from workman comp benefits to down to the Social Security retirement benefits?
No.
Yeah, at age 62, and then there's a phase down starting at age 65 on the state award.
Could you give us some typical average kind of figures on what happens to somebody as they go through the...
Well, let's say an average PTD would be 700. It could be as high as 843 if it's at the state maximum, but an average one, let's say it's $700 a month. Let's say that the Social Security disability benefit would be between $400 and $500. Let's go low and say $400. Therefore, the carrier would take a reduction in that case of $300. The combined benefit to the workman would be the same, of course. He would go along to 62, at which time Social Security would no longer pay the disability benefit, would be retirement. And of course, we're assuming that he's made the maximum contribution. So from two sources, it would be more like $300. So he would probably at that point take a, really no reduction, because the state liability, the carrier's liability would go back up to the state maximum, because we were saying that there's no reduction the state can make that's going to lower benefits. So at age 65 would be the first reduction, and it would come in turn, it would be a $350 reduction, because the state would is authorized to cut its PTD award by 50% at 65 down to 100% at 70. So at age 70, and I understand there are not many PTD cases that would run on that long, at age 70 he would be receiving only Social Security retirement, plus medical care benefits. Medical care benefits are not touched. The medical care benefits, if any, are lifetime.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Roberts.
Is the basic assumption then that the individual who is 65 is receiving the retirement benefits, right now some of those individuals can work up to a certain amount, right? Isn't that true? And still receive their Social Security.
$3,000.
But if they have received an injury which has put them in the permanent total disability category, they're still going to receive some disability benefits, because it still prevents them from being employed at some point.
They were receiving 50%.
And is the reasoning because they could earn something past 65?
The reasoning is at that age they're usually retired, but they phase it down because they're that's the normal age of retirement is age 65, and it's phased down at that age somewhere to age 70. But so it's phased down to age 70 when it's all.
But you can't make the assumption that those individuals would not seek any kind of part-time employment.
Yeah.
No, they could do that and not lose their Social Security as long as it's under their
maximum.
Any further questions? If not,
you're in, Matt.
Okay. Are there any further? I think we've adopted all the amendments except that one on page 6, implicitly or strongly. Okay. Senator Wirestone moves. I believe that
Senator Hannon wanted to, was going to talk to someone regarding that. I don't think there's any problem, but we better have, I suppose, let's have a roll call on this amendment. Connie?
Okay. Is this removing disputably?
I don't know if he's
it's coming. Conclusively for disputably on that.
Conclusively, it would be the word conclusively instead of disputably.
And this is really what we intended in
that
the
was my intent, right.
Was the intent, as we understand right. it in the subcommittee.
Okay. Senator Carson?
Aye.
Senator Hannon? Senator Grinstead?
Aye.
Senator Roberts?
Aye.
Senator Trow?
Aye.
Senator Wires?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Okay.
That's carried. Okay, I think that pretty well does it. We've adopted.
We didn't adopt all of them.
Yes, I believe. Yeah. We've adopted multiple. I think we've.
Is there something called a safety clause in this bill?
A safety what?
You want to move it up?
Yeah.
Very well. I move that we send Senate Bill 1048 for due passage.
Senator Trow has moved that we send
Senate
Bill 1048 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Carson?
Aye.
Senator Hannon? Senator Grinstead?
Aye.
Senator Roberts?
No.
Senator Trow?
Aye.
Senator Wires?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
You got it.
Okay. Motion is carried. Nothing. I think it's getting too late at 10:40. Let's try. That's 10:49 is the.
We haven't got time.
I've got to show you a bill today. I've got a bill.
9:30.
Okay. No.
No.
I don't think we have. Let's see. We have time. You want to take the committee? Want to take action on unit pricing today?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. We have the amendments, I think.
There's no taxes.
I was just going to use other ones.
Back and see if you wanted to consider.
Yeah. The Fox amendments would include, as I understand it, would include the 7-Eleven, these chain stores that
right.
are convenience stores.
I'm afraid that'll kill the bill, Mr. Chairman. It's been pointed out to me that when somebody goes to 7-Eleven or a Plaid Pantry or something like that, they go in there because they're in a big hurry and they're willing to pay extra for the emergency or the convenience, and they aren't price shopping.
They're not shopping. That's right.
So they're not shopping. They're just they're going in and dumping their money to get something they want.
I'm sure they know that.
If they're shopping, they wouldn't be going to one of those.
Right.
That's right. That's for
right.
sure.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I think the amendments would be a very appropriate.
She'll be back in a few minutes. If you want to hang on.
I think the amendments are something that we have the markets that are paying union wages cheaper.
You can go just go there if you want.
Okay.
The committee has two amendments. One is there are some amendments that are proposed by Manley Backinson. The other, of course, is the one from Nellie Fox, AFL-CIO, and you might want to look at them both in regard to the bill.
Yeah. Thank you. No,
what's Manley Backinson? Who's he?
He was
he's the head of United Grocers.
Steve, you know who he is?
Or one of the executives of United Grocers. Our suppliers for AAA. I'd like to move the bill out unamended with a due pass recommendation.
Okay.
Wendy?
Do you want to move? Senator Wires moves. What number is that?
2242.
House Bill 2242, 2 to 4. Not as amended, just as is. Without a mass recommendation. Okay, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Carson?
No.
Senator Hannon?
I might vote for it later.
You leave, okay. Senator Drumstead?
Aye.
Senator Roberts?
Aye.
Senator Trill?
Aye.
Senator Wires?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. We got it out. Let's give that bill to, Senator Trill, would you like to?
Senator Roberts.
Aye.
Would you like to?
Sure.
Okay.
I just lost it.
What'd you bet?
It wouldn't go out.
I would like to call attention to whoever wrote the article.